Welcome to the Dynasty Dugout Show, a podcast covering all things minor league baseball. Get a front row seat to the action with everything you need to know about the future stars of Major League Baseball. And now, here's your host, Chris Clegg.
Good morning and welcome to the Dynasty Dugout Show. Today is Wednesday, March the 5th. Spring training is in full action. Spring breakout games are just a week away, and we're here to talk about baseball. But first, this episode is brought to you by Connect Roasters, the coffee that Ian Happ makes. I've got a partial cup here, drank some of it, but the Connect Roasters Gold Glove blend is exceptional. You can get it, buy one, get one 50% off today using the code DynastyDugout at checkout or use the link in the description. Get your coffee. It's smooth as Ian Happ's glove. He's a three-straight gold glover, so pretty smooth. I love the coffee. I'm a coffee fanatic, and I would vouch that it's some of the best coffee out there. So go to connectroasters.com, get you some Gold Glove blend today. We're going to dive in on post-hype hitters today and talk about several different guys that have once been hyped as top prospects and now not so much. So it's been an interesting path, and all these guys have kind of taken different paths. It's also important to remember that some guys take a little bit longer than others to develop and come into their own. So for a prospect to come up and not immediately hit is okay. Like, you don't have to be a star immediately. I know we've gotten spoiled by a lot of these guys, but at the end of the day, I really think that you look at some of these guys that are like 22 to 24 that people are already out on, and it creates a good buy-in opportunity in fantasy and dynasty leagues. So right off the top, I want to talk about Sal Frelick. This is one that was specifically asked to me in the Discord. So Frelick's interesting. He is entered the draft as a pure hit tool type with speed, first round pick, 15th overall by the Brewers in 2021, $4 million bonus. I'd argue that he really hasn't lived up to that yet. Last season, he hit two home runs, stole 18 bags, and he slashed 260, 320, 335. Now, it's tough to live in the majors if you are slugging about what your OBP is. That's obviously an issue in itself. But what to make of Frelick? Can he improve those numbers? You probably heard the narrative. He entered camp this year up 25 pounds. You can see it when you look at him. Like, it's pretty notable. Also, he had a new max EV already this spring, north of 107 miles an hour. So, can Sal Frelick improve the power? I mean, here's the reality. He's really good in the field, and he's got speed. He's just got to get on base and give you a little more. Because if you look at his Savant page, you look at the quality of contact metrics, first percentile average EV, first percentile barrel rate, first percentile hard hit rate, 10th percentile sweet spot, third percentile bat speed. You cannot live with those. Frelick is just 24. I think there's still time for him to really make a bounce back. But just to show you where he needs to improve, his average exit velocity on fly balls last year was 83 miles an hour. That's bad. Line drives, 88. His average exit velocity on line drives was like below MLB average for overall average EV. So that's a little bit concerning. We got to see the launch angle improve because the barrel rate is bad. Like, there's no nice way to put it. A 0.8% barrel rate just won't cut it. Average EV, 83.4 miles an hour. Very, very bad. Frelick has got to hit the ball in the air harder. End of the day. Can he do that? Maybe. I think it's an encouraging sign that we saw him already hit a ball and have a new max EV this spring. So that's pretty notable in my opinion. So when we look at the profile, what can we expect this year? Well, in two MLB seasons, and he's got, I get that one of them was a partial season too, so we don't want to put a ton of stock into that, but let's just go 747 career plate appearances. So a little over a full year, he's got five home runs. Can he hit 5-7 this year? Possibly. Can he steal 20 bases? I don't see why not. The contact skills are very, very good. Like, Frelick is capable of running better batting averages if he hits the ball a little harder. So when you make a lot of contact, you naturally are going to see higher BABIPs. Frelick's not running high BABIPs because he's swinging a wet noodle. Like, he's not hitting the ball hard at all. 91% in-zone contact rate is borderline elite. The overall contact rate of 87%, that's definitely elite. The swing decisions need to improve. Frelick swung at just 60% of pitches over the heart of the zone. MLB averaged 76%. So we got to see that improve. Zone swing percent, 10 percentage points below MLB average. So Frelick certainly needs to improve there. Now, this next guy, Tyler Soderstrom, is somebody that I do like a lot. Soderstrom showed us some good things down the stretch last year. Problem is, he's in a pretty tight situation with the Athletics. Now you say, like, how could that be? Well, they've got a pretty crowded lineup all of a sudden that was really good in the second half last year. Soderstrom, there's been talk of him catching some, being the backup catcher. He's also playing first base. The problem is, they've got Shea Langelier as a catcher, who's very, very good. And the team has 2024 first-rounder Nick Kurtz knocking on the door. Soderstrom last year, he missed time with injury. He had 143 AAA plate appearances. He had 10 home runs, had a 991 OPS. In the majors, he had 213 plate appearances. He had 9 home runs, and he had a 743 OPS. So not great there, but you look at the numbers and how he improved, pretty fascinating to see month over month how he got better in the majors. So in the second half, what changed? Well, he began to pull the ball more, and he began to hit it harder in the air. That obviously is pretty significant. The ground ball rate's still an issue, but those improvements are pretty notable. In September, we saw Soderstrom hit 280. He had a 340 OBP and an 852 OPS in the majors. That's substantial. We know he hits the ball hard. Soderstrom's always made good contact. I know he's always kind of gotten the knock as like the guy who whiffs a lot, but he's always run really good in-zone contact rates from the minors all the way up, and it's honestly not all that bad. Like, he ran an 82% in-zone contact rate in the majors last year. Like, I think that'll play. So here's the thing. Soderstrom is going to have to show early that he's capable of holding a spot. Can him and Nick Kurtz coexist? I believe so. And I also believe that there's 25 home run juice in this bat, especially going to play in Sacramento. He's going to be playing a minor league stadium. Ball's going to fly there. I think he could hit 25. I would not be shocked. Where's the batting average settle in? I think it could be better than what we've seen. He's a 204 career major league hitter, 233 last year. But again, his end of the season was 280 over the final month. Could he be a 250 hitter? Yeah. I also think he's going to play pretty good in an OBP league. This is a guy that hits the ball incredibly hard in the air. And when he gets to the poolside, he does immense damage. So got to lift the ball more. But Soderstrom, definitely somebody to buy back into. I like him a lot. Maybe somebody not to buy into, and that's Spencer Torkelson. Torkelson is a tough one to figure out. He got a lot of buzz on social media the other day because he hit a home run. Cool, like, it's spring training. There's a lot of guys that hit home runs that I don't necessarily think are relevant. Torkelson had his 31 home run season in the majors. It got a lot of people excited. This was a former first overall pick, so naturally, like, there's high expectations when you go that high, when you get the kind of bonus he did. And I'd say he's failed to live up to that. He followed up that 31 home run performance in 2023 with a dud in 2024. He hit 10 home runs and a 669 OPS in the majors. In the minors last year, a little bit better, 799 OPS and 11 home runs and 275 plate appearances. But Torkelson has struggled mightily. I mean, it just is what it is. Can he get out of his own head and bounce back? It's a question. The team has moved Colt Keith over to first base, which kind of tells you what you need to know. So now either Torkelson's on the weak side of a platoon or he goes to AAA. My instinct is that he goes to AAA and the Tigers try to rebuild some value so they can trade him. Just what I see. If they view Colt Keith as their first baseman long term, there's no reason to keep Spencer Torkelson, in my opinion. If he mashes in AAA, puts up some good data, all of a sudden he's more tradable. I mean, you look and the underlying metrics aren't all that bad with Torkelson. He's got good bat speed. He has a pretty good approach, honestly. He hits the ball hard in the air. So what has gone wrong with Tork? Like, why did we see that fall off? Well, struggling with fastballs, for one. Like, good fastballs gave him fits. Whiff rate on breaking and off-speed pitches. He had a 35% whiff rate on breaking balls and a 45% whiff rate on changeups and splitters. That's a massive concern. Also, poor quality of contact. He's capable of hitting the ball hard, but also hit a lot of pop-ups. That'll kill you. I mean, his 13% pop-up rate is very, very bad. Contact rates have trended in the wrong direction. Now the zone contact rate's right in line with Tyler Soderstrom, so similar range there. And the overall contact rate was around 73% last year. Like I said, the approach is good. He doesn't chase often, and he's swinging over the heart of the plate in the zone around league average. So, like, that'll play as an above-average approach when you look at the swing decisions, but we want to see him be a little more aggressive. Is Torkelson viable to buy back into? I'm honestly not sure. All right, let's jump back in and talk about Jordan Walker. If you've not checked out, I've got a 15-minute breakdown on Jordan Walker on the YouTube channel. You can go check that out. It's super in-depth, and hopefully you can get something out of that more than this. I'm just going to quickly go over what I think of Jordan Walker, but you can check out that video. It's linked. It may pop up right now. I'll try to pop it up. Go check that out, and I think that'll be some more value than the short, quick hit with Jordan Walker. Here's the reality. Jordan Walker was pushed too fast, and he was moved to a position that he is not comfortable with. As long as Jordan Walker's in the outfield, I honestly worry a little bit. Like, I don't know if he can handle that. He just has a lot of pressure on him. He's also 22 years old. He debuted in the majors at 20. He was not ready. The bat was good. I mean, we had seen a good previous season from him in the minors and in the AFL. He dominated. I just don't think he was ready at all. But we're talking still about a 116 WRC plus in your rookie year as a 21-year-old. Last year, very bad. But Walker ended the season on a very high note. Saw what he did down the stretch last year. And he came back up later in the year. He, let's say, August 30th, filter from there forward, and numbers were good. Like, it looked like there was some resurgence there. All of a sudden, it's like, all right, maybe there's some viability here with Walker. Hit 5 home runs in the month of September. That's obviously encouraging to see. He had a 5-hit game in there. He had several multi-hit games. He ended the season on a very high note. Walker can mash. He hits the ball very hard in the air. Contact rates are actually pretty respectable. Like, it's nothing that, like, gives me worries. He's just, the approach has to be cleaned up a bit with Walker. He chases a lot. It's a little bit of a concern with the profile is that you need to clean up the chase, but also want to see some more aggression. The zone swing rate's average. The heart swing rate's below average. So, again, check out that video. It's put right here. It's a 15-minute breakdown if you want to know more about Jordan Walker. But that's what you need to know. I think there is some still viability. He's 22 years old. All right, Cabrian Hayes of the Pittsburgh Pirates. Hayes is fascinating because he's one that everybody wants to buy into every single year. Like, if you look at Hayes' StatCast page, it's like, oh man, this guy has pop. Well, except for last year, which he was hurt, so everything declined a bit. But the previous season of his career, Hayes was running average exit velocities between 90 and 92 miles an hour. Like, in 2023, his 92.2 mile an hour average EV was in the top 7% of major league hitters. He's topped out at 113. There's juice. Hayes struggles to lift the ball. He cannot lift the ball at all. Last year he was hurt. The average EV dipped to 89 miles an hour. The barrel rate dipped to 2.4%. That's concerning. I almost want to throw the 2024 season out the window a bit for Hayes because the injury. But again, it is worth noting, like, he played through it. You hope he's healthy now. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. But can he lift the ball enough? That's the major question. We've seen Hayes have the 15 home run season in 2023. We know there's some juice if he lifts. The contact skills are really good. Actually, in 2024, he ran his best contact rates. He ran a 92% end zone contact rate and an 82% overall contact rate, which is really good. The approach was fine. Want to see him be a bit more aggressive. He swung at just 61% of pitches over the heart of the plate. MLB averaged 76%. So Hayes needs to show some more aggression on and jump on pitches where he can do damage. Is there viability with Hayes? Maybe. His price tag is depleted enough now where maybe you can take a shot on him. I mean, he's going to play. Like, we know that Hayes is going to play. He's going to be third baseman for the Pirates, but how good can he be? Well, still to be determined. He is just 28 years old. We know he can hit the ball hard. Can he lift? I mean, we're not going to get many stolen bases out of him. I think he's a 10 stolen base type. Can he get 10 homers? So if he's a 10-10 type without a good average, like, you know, it's not all that great. So, Cabrian Hayes, I'm more out on than in. But what about Brett Baty, New York Mets? Baty, another one. It feels like every spring he, like, looks like he's going to pop off. Where does he fit right now is the question. The team brought back Pete Alonso. Mark Fantos is going to be at third base. Baty's been pretty decent this spring. 2 home runs and 20 plate appearances. He's changed the swing a little bit, changed the approach. Hasn't changed the fact that he's still hitting the ball on the ground too much. Last year, he ran a 54% ground ball rate. This spring's a 53% ground ball rate. So nothing has really changed. Brett Beatty has always hit the ball very hard. So we know that he's capable of getting to power, but he hasn't done it because he can't lift the ball. His EVs in the air are awesome. I mean, last year on pulled fly balls, 101 mile an hour average exit velocity at AAA and 97 in the majors on pulled fly balls. So that's obviously really good. His max EV of 115 last year is notable. Contact rates are fine, like average contact rates. He just can't lift as much like Hayes, except there's no role for him. Like, where does he fit into this lineup is the question. He's been part of a lot of trade rumors. So does he get moved? Maybe. I just don't see a great fit for him right now, unfortunately. He still has an option. He can go to AAA, and that might be the case. I think they do want to trade Brett Beatty if they can, and maybe a fresh start is what Brett Beatty needs. But still, we've seen it time and time again with guys that cannot lift the ball. It's hard to really change that without sacrificing something else. So I would say Brett Beatty, I am out, unfortunately. What about Marco Luciano? Man, it seems like an eternity ago that Luciano was a top prospect. He signed back in 2018. He's just 23 years old, which is a crazy thing. He'll spend the entire season in 2025 as a 23-year-old. He's moved to the outfield now. Where does his reps come from, though, is the question. Luciano can hit for power. There's no denying that. We're talking about somebody that hits the ball exceptionally hard. It's just actualizing it into results. Like, he doesn't hit the ball in the air enough to get to it. And the contact rates are a little bit concerning. The power is definitely above average or better, but he's really struggled to create barrels for a variety of reasons. But ultimately, Luciano is the player, like, again, how do the Giants feel about him? I mean, the fact that they are moving him to the outfield, I mean, yeah, he's not a natural shortstop by any means. Could have gone third base, but where does he actually play? Well, I think he's going to play in AAA, sadly. I think that's where the playing time is going to come from. Like, he's going to get reps in that AAA outfield until he proves something. Looking at his profile with Luciano, it's interesting because hard hit rates are good. The sweet spot rate's good, but he doesn't barrel the ball up all that much. Barrel rates were a little bit concerning last year, so that's something to really keep an eye on with Marco Luciano. But again, the EVs are good. Like, when he actually gets the ball in the air, there's results. The problem is the launch angles are inconsistent. It's not that the ground ball rate's all that high. I mean, it's a little higher than you like to see. But at the end of the day, like, the sweet spot rate's really good. It's just there's some bad launch angles incorporated in there, and it hurts him. Zone contact rate in the majors was 79% last year. Like, that will play. That number is fine. In AAA, it was 81%. So those are fine. In the majors, 70% contact, well, it's not the best. Like, for a power hitter, you can make that work. He's hyper-aggressive on pitches in the zone, which I like to see, and he doesn't chase. I mean, he ran a 22% chase rate in the majors. That's really, really good. So you like to see that. And it was even lower. It was 14.5% in AAA. So, I don't know. I look at Luciano, and is there still some things to like? Yeah, but he is going to have to prove himself at some point. I know he's still young, but the Giants not exuding much confidence in him should tell us a little bit about what we need to know and feel about him. Take a quick break, and then we will return.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, back from the break. Nick Gonzalez, Pittsburgh Pirates. Gonzalez has been hyped since he was drafted 7th overall in 2020. Received a pretty high bonus out of New Mexico State. And he's somebody that I've always been lower on, honestly. Like, when I saw him in single A, when I saw him in high A, there were some serious struggles with fastballs. And, like, when a hitter struggles with fastballs, that's a concern, in my opinion, especially when you're facing lower-level talent. get to the majors, that could give you fits. Now, he has improved that a little bit. He had pretty decent numbers against fastballs last year. He had a 77% contact rate against fastballs, which not the best, but it'll work. But he hit 285 against them. So that's good. I think we saw a little bit of improvement. Gonzalez is a quick runner. He doesn't actualize it on the base pass, though. And he's decent in second base. But when we look at the profile, Gonzalez doesn't hit the ball that hard. When he gets it in the air, the EVs in the air are not great. So that's a little bit of a concern, too. And also, like, the launch angles are pretty inconsistent here. So the zone contact rates are good. Like, you look at Nick Gonzalez, 83% in zone contact rate last year in the majors. That'll play. The overall contact rate of 75%. Yeah, I like that. I like the aggressiveness in the zone. 90% heart swing rate. That's very high. And I like to see that. That shows good recognition. Zone swing rate was 11 percentage points above MLB average. The chase rate of 34% is kind of the downfall a bit here. Gonzalez doesn't walk. He walked at a 4.7% clip last year. And while he keeps the strikeouts in check, there are some concerns regarding what kind of output do we get from Nick Gonzalez, like from a power standpoint, from a speed standpoint. You know, last year between the majors and AAA, it was 12 home runs, 5 stolen bases. Problem is, he was caught 6 times on the base paths. I don't care how good your sprint speed is, if you can't steal bases efficiently, you're not going to get the green light. And I'm kind of afraid that's the case here with Gonzalez. How much does he run? How much power does he hit for? Also, you've got Nick York looming, who has made major steps forward with his game. So Nick York's somebody to watch out for. They've worked him in the outfield, but frankly, Nick York could take this spot. Gonzalez is going to get the reps early in the year, in my opinion. He needs to clean up the chase rate a little bit, I believe. Also, when we look at some of the other metrics, like, I think that he needs to hit the ball in the air a little bit harder. He's shown the ability to get to the pool side in the air, which is good, but I'm a little bit worried about Nick Gonzalez and the output you'll get from him. I get the reasons to buy back in, but also I'm personally not all in on him. Noelvi Marte, this is a weird one. I mean, Marte last year, obviously we know he got popped for PEDs, and he was horrific coming back from the suspension. I think anybody could be quick to say, oh, it was the PEDs that helped him, but PEDs don't make you make more contact, at least in my opinion. I don't know what the issues were other than I think it could have been mental. Marte struggled substantially. I mean, just was what it was. He had 242 plate appearances in the majors. He slashed 210, 248, 301. He had a very high chase rate. Contact rate, the end zone contact was good. And that's the thing with Marte. I think people have always looked at him and said, this guy's a power hitter. He doesn't make contact. It's actually not true. Like, Noelvi Marte has made pretty good contact, like, his entire pro career, dating back to the minors and coming up even in the Mariners system. The zone contact rate of 81%, according to Savant, that's fine. The overall whiff rate of 68%, that's a little bit concerning. Chase rate was astronomical, though, and a big jump from what we had seen in the past. Personally, I think Marte was pressing a lot. I mean, if you get suspended 80 games, you have something to prove when you come back. And Marte had something to prove coming back from the suspension. I think he was pressing a lot. Why do I believe that? Well, first pitch swing rate was way up. So trying to get early, the swing rate, overall swing rate, way up. That's a little bit of concern. I think that when you see the chase rate jump that substantially, all of a sudden you're talking about somebody that's trying to press and get things done. Noelvi Marte is still young. He's 23 years old, and he will be 23 the entire 2025 season. I think it is too soon to write him off, but I also don't know what the expectations are. As things stand, Marte's probably going to start the year in AAA. I think that's a little bit concerning, too. He hasn't been good at all this spring, so AAA, get your confidence back and see where you go. Marte's probably a good buy low in Dynasty. In redraft, he's probably in a void. What about Henry Davis? Well, Davis, for me, every year it's like, okay, this is going to be the year where Henry Davis really pops off. And I'm just not sure I can keep saying that and it actually comes to fruition. Yes, Henry Davis went to Driveline, but didn't help him last year. Not sure it helps him this year. The interesting thing is, in the minors, the numbers have been really, really good. Like, you look at the underlying data from Henry Davis, and I hate to use these words, but it gives off quad A vibes, just given the difference that we see from AAA to the majors. I mean, you look at the results, it's clear. Like, has struggled in the majors. Is he in his own head? I don't know. I don't have a great answer for that. The contact rates are substantially different from AAA to the majors. And honestly, like, I just wonder if that's in his head and he's pressing it. Like, Noel V is pressing a bit. Like, when you look at the difference in the quality of contact metrics, I mean, there was a 3 mile an hour difference last year from the majors to the minors as far as a ninth percentile exit velocity goes. Sweet spot rate dropped. That's pretty notable. Ground ball rate was up in the majors. Launch angle down. The barrel rate way down in the majors. His swing percentage is down, which is he, well, what's the deal there? Also chased way less in the majors, but honestly, the aggressiveness in the minors paid off. Does he not feel like he can be aggressive against major league pitching? That is the question. Now, Davis can pull balls in the air. That's one thing to know. And he hits the ball hard in the air. Where does his playing time come from? And that's still the major question. I don't think the outfield thing is going to work out for him. So obviously, that's worth noting. Joey Bart, he's been pretty solid for the Pirates at catcher. Also, Andy Rodriguez is back. He's going to catch some and get some first base. Where does Davis fit? I don't think this is the year to buy back in. I think former first overall pick, do the Pirates cut their losses and trade him? I'm not sure. But I also wonder if he's third on the depth chart at catcher, and that's a little bit concerning. Let's end the year on a high note, though. This is a weird post-hype one. It's Josh Jung of the Texas Rangers. Jung is 27, former eighth overall pick in 2019. It feels weird to call him a post-hype guy. So why am I? Well, he's only had one season in the majors, one full season at least. 2022, he had 102 plate appearances. Last year, he was injured, had 188 plate appearances. 2023 season was really good. Jung hit 23 homers, hit a 266, 315, 467 slash. That's really good. So we look at the profile. Jung's had a lot of fluky injuries. Hasn't been able to stay healthy. Yes, that is concerning. I mean, I think that you have to factor in that he has not stayed healthy at any point in his career. Though now the cost is depleted enough where he's probably a good buy. So when you look at that, I think the cost is where you want it to be. The weird thing is, Jung's exit velocities were way down last year. His average exit velocity was down by about 4 miles an hour, or 6 miles an hour, excuse me, not four, 6 miles an hour. That's very notable. Like, I think that was completely injury related, if we're being honest. So when you factor that in, like, I think that that's a big deal. Like, he was, honestly, we know he was hurt. I think it was still affecting him. You don't see an exit velocity drop like that. The sweet spot rate was still good, so that's worth noting. The barrel rate was still 10%, so he had a lot of balls at ideal angles. The ex-Wobicon was still really good. And honestly, like, you look in the, it was a smaller sample, so we have to acknowledge that, but the contact rates, I think those are something worth watching too. He saw a drop, not much, but a couple percentage points on both the overall and the end zone. And he was a little more aggressive. The chase rate was up. The zone swing rate was down. Swing systems weren't great. The heart swing rate was down. Those were below major league average. So why are we buying back into Josh Jung? Well, we know what he's capable of when healthy. He's been a walking injury his entire career. That's obviously a concern. But when healthy, Josh Jung can mash. If he's healthy, I think we see a 20-25 home run season. His value is low enough now where there's value in that. He's going to hit for average. And while he's not going to get on bases super high clip because of the aggressiveness and the chase rates, I still think the OBP will play. So something to watch out for this year. But Josh Jung is a good buy for me. I think that where I've seen him go in drafts and how people have valued him for dynasty purposes, you can buy back in comfortably to Josh Jung and probably get some results. That's going to do it. That has been our post-hype hitters. Thank you for tuning in. We will see you tomorrow.
GEICO makes it easy to get affordable renter's insurance in as little as 90 seconds. And then you'll start to wonder why everything else isn't so fast. Like, why does it take so long to do the dishes? A meal that's gone in 3 requires 45 minutes worth of dishes. Doesn't make sense. but it does make sense to get renter's insurance through GEICO. That way, that pile of dirty dishes and the other things you love are covered. Get more with GEICO.